Alrighty. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
In Israel, where I come from, we start saying Shabbat Shalom on Friday in the afternoon. And in Israel, everybody says Shabbat Shalom. On Friday, the Muslims have to say Shabbat Shalom. The Christian must say Shabbat Shalom. Only in Israel. So it's a great place to be. Well, I bring you greetings from Yahweh's eternal capital, Jerusalem. It is a great blessing to be here. I'm not going to hold you very long today because we have many things to discuss tomorrow. But I do want to share some things with you now. Yahweh's congregation is not an organization, but is a spiritual organism. And somebody doesn't just join Yahweh's congregation. John 6:44 says, "No man can come to me unless the Father draws him." So it's a very basic kingdom principle that in a kingdom you were chosen by the king. Compared to democracy, where you're joining where you're going to live. So I want to share with you a little bit of the background of Yeshua's congregation, starting in 30 AD up until today. In the first century AD, in the land of Israel where I live, Yeshua started his ministry in about 27 AD. And it is life-changing. And I give you my invitation. If you can ever come to Jerusalem, and you could walk in the very steps Yeshua walked, you can take a ride on the very water that he walked on. But I can't promise you can walk on the water. But I will take you in a boat. And you can see the wonderful promised land of Israel that Yahweh set out for his people. You can see Jerusalem, Yahweh's eternal capital, where the Garden of Eden was, and where Yeshua will reign for 1,000 years. Certainly, Jerusalem is Yahweh's eternal capital. It was in Bible times, and it still is today. A little later, I'll share some wonderful blessings that Yahweh is pouring on his work from there. But we know in 30 AD, Yeshua was crucified. He was not crucified on a cross like Christians believe. But he was crucified on a living tree. And after Yeshua was crucified, something changed very dramatically. Not the Sabbath day, not the Torah, not the laws of clean and unclean, but But there were people that believed Yeshua was the Messiah. And there were people who didn't believe it. Now before Yeshua was crucified, he chose 12 disciples that he called apostles. In Mark 3:14,
it
says he ordained them. Literally, he ordained the 12. And he trained them personally for almost 3 years. And they are the pillars of the New Testament congregation. Now, after Yeshua was resurrected, for maybe 12, 14 years, the good news message stayed in Jerusalem and Israel. It didn't immediately go to the nations. And of course, all the believers were Jewish or Israelite. Then in the year 44 AD, we know that Simon Peter, the chief apostle, he was sent to a city called Joppa. If you come to Israel, I'll bring you there. They still have a sign of Simon the Tanner's house. I can show it to you. And Yahweh called a man by the name of Cornelius. You could read it in Acts, the 10th chapter. Now, Cornelius was not a Gentile. But he wasn't an Israelite either. He was somebody who was called an Elohim fearer, which meant that he kept the Torah. He kept the Sabbath and the laws of clean and unclean. But because he wasn't Jewish, he was not circumcised. So he wasn't really a Gentile, but not really a Jew. And they called them Elohim fearers. They met with the Jewish people in the synagogue. They met with the Jewish people in the synagogue. But now they were getting also a chance at salvation. Yahweh was allowing the people of the nations to also join the covenant of Israel. And because of judicial order, he was starting with the chief apostle with Simon Peter. About 2 years after this, the apostle Paul came along. And Paul,
silent the phone.
Yeah. 2 years later, the apostle Paul was called. He was knocked down on the road to Damascus. And if you come to Israel, I'll show you that road to Damascus. I could show you the very road where Yeshua struck down Paul. And Paul had a great commission. He was going to go to the Gentiles. He was going to go to kings. And he was going to go to the sons of
Israel.
So at this point, the good news message started going very quickly around the world. And you had many Roman bishops in the Roman Empire. And you had many true believers that were in the Eastern Empire. And then the apostles started dying out. And unfortunately, many of these believers fell away to paganism. The Apostle John was the last living apostle. He lived till almost 100
AD.
And he ordained a disciple called Polycarp. Polycarp was filled with faith. And he was the leader of all the congregations in Asia Minor. In the beginning of the second century, the year 116 AD, there was a bishop in Rome who decided they were going to start keeping Sunday instead of Shabbat. And they were going to start to keep Easter instead of Pesach,
Passover.
And Polycarp fought against this bishop. But really to no avail. Then there was a man after Polycarp called Polycrates. Another man of faith. And the bishops were threatening him. Because he was keeping the original Passover on the 14th day of the first month. And when they threatened to throw him out of the congregation, and we have his original letter that he sent to Victor the bishop, he said the apostle Philip and the apostle John, who was on the bosom of Yeshua, they all kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month. The day the people take all the leaven out of their home. And he said, greater men than I have said, I'd rather obey Yahweh than man. And this went on for another 100 years. And there was a separation with the churches in the west in Rome and the churches in the east that were staying to the
church.
And then there was a emperor of Rome
in
313 AD. His name was Constantine. He was going out to battle. And he had a dream, and in the dream he saw a pagan cross. And he won the battle and he claimed he was going to be a Christian. But he started a new Christianity.
Christianity.
Thank you. A pagan Christianity.
Pagan Christianity.
He said, no longer will we worship on Shabbat. But everything that's done on Shabbat, we will do on Sunday. The venerable day of the sun. He also brought in Easter and Christmas and many vile pagan things. And he threatened the real believers. After
Constantine,
his son came. He was called Julian the Apostate. And he was much worse than
Constantine.
And he threatened anybody keeping the Sabbath, we will kill. This was in the year 360 AD. At the Council of Laodicea. So the true believers went underground. But we shouldn't be surprised because Revelation told us this was going to happen. In Revelation 12,
news you were.
Verse 6. And the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place, it having been prepared from Elohim. That they might nourish her 1260
days.
And the true congregation of Yahweh was underground for 1260 years. And the church that Constantine started, called the Universal Church, or Catholic Church, you may know better. This church started now as the New Christianity. But it was never the congregation of Yahweh. And for 1260 years, all the emperors after Constantine persecuted the true congregation of Yahweh in the wilderness. I've studied this subject for more than 30 years. I've went to the places where the true believers were. And I'm in the process of writing a book about it. But they were amazing people of faith. In the 4th and 5th century, they called them Paulicians. There's a book they found in the
1800s
that goes all the way back to these Paulicians. And it says that they kept the commandments of Yahweh. Most important, the Sabbath day. They kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month. They kept all the laws of clean and unclean. And they rejected the Catholic or Universal Church. They rejected baptizing babies, paying penance for your sins, and anything else that comes from paganism. After this, these people were also called Bagamiyos from the area they lived in. In the ancient language, that means my beloved. And then they moved to the valleys. And in the 7th, the 8th, the 9th, the 10th century, they were called Waldenses. And it comes from Valdos. Valdos means valley dweller. And again, these people kept the Sabbath. They baptized adults. They had the laying on of hands. They kept the Torah and the commandments. And they believed in the resurrection of the dead and the 1,000 millennial year rule of Yeshua. These are not things that we made up now. But these are beliefs that come from Yeshua himself. And they've been handed through the ages from one elder to another elder. And preserved in Yahweh's true congregation. There was a man in the 12th century, his name was Peter Waldo. One of the most famous Waldenses of the Waldenses. He was a very, very rich merchant. And he used all of his riches to print the Bible in the local language of the people. They said some of the children of the Waldenses could memorize whole books of the Bible. And they stayed very separated from the world. From time to time, the Roman emperors would send armies against the Waldenses. And they would tell them to stop believing in Yeshua or they'll be killed. Sometimes they would cut the head of the children off. And the parent would have to come down the mountain with the head of their child around their neck. But they never stopped believing in the truth. And their faith grew stronger. And their numbers got bigger. I've been in the very caves where they hid from the Romans. I saw with my own eyes the very schools that they used to train their missionaries for. And they were true brethren connected to us in our history. You could read about them in Brother Duggar's book. The true history of the true congregation. Before Peter Waldo died, he went to Bavaria. And many people were saved there. Many Sabbath-keeping congregations started. In the area of Bavaria. In Germany. And some of those areas there. In the 1500s, when Martin Luther started the Protestant Reformation, unfortunately, many of these Waldenses joined the Protestant Reformation. They were just so tired of suffering in martyrism. But there was still a true remnant of Sabbath-keeping believers who believed like we do today. They believed in repentance from sin, baptism and laying on of hands, the kingdom to come, and eternal judgment. In 1620, these people came over to the USA, to the free world. Exactly 1,260 years like we read in Revelation. This was the beginning of what the Bible tells us in Revelation 3. Was the Philadelphia era. For the first time since Yeshua, these people could believe without being persecuted. And the work in America grew very quickly. Congregations started in Rhode Island. And New Jersey, the very place I was born. One of the very first true Sabbath-keeping congregations was only 15 minutes from where I live in New Jersey. These people were called Seventh-day Baptists. And different things. Puritans, Quakers.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Go ahead.
They were, some were called Puritans and Quakers.
Puritans, Quakers.
But they were all connected through the same spirit. And with the line of ordination from elder to elder to elder. In the year 1840, a man by the name of William Miller predicted that Yeshua was returning in 1844. Of course, it didn't happen. And there was a split in the congregation. Part of the congregation and a man by the name of White, who had a wife named Ellen White, split off and started something called the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Ellen White said, "You cannot eat meat." Although she ate pork until the day she died. I heard that story firsthand from Naomi Duggar. Naomi Duggar's grandfather knew Ellen White personally. Ellen White was epileptic. Possibly even demon possessed. But she forsook the faith. A man by the name of Gilbert Kramer, who was a real strong brother, who kept the original charter that at that time was called Church of God Seventh-day. He followed along and spent all of his money to save the magazine they had at that time called the Bible Advocate. But they made a very big mistake in the year 1901. They took the name Church of God Seventh Day, and they went to the government and they incorporated it. Now, why is it so bad to incorporate? Because the word to incorporate comes from the word corpus, which means like a body, a corpse. And you're creating an entity that doesn't exist. It's almost like a marriage. But the marriage was made between the Church of God Seventh Day and the government. The United States government. A government that does not believe in prayer in school. A government that does not let you pray. And a government that puts on their money in God we trust. Not Yahweh we trust. Not Yeshua we trust. In God we trust.
Who
is God?
God.
God is the Babylonian deity. But America is end time Babylon. So it fits for America, but not for Yahweh's congregation. I believe it was a very bad move to incorporate in
1901.
And I believe it started the last era of the congregation called Laodicean. You could read about it in Revelation 3, verse 11 through 14. Laodicean means ruled by the people. But Yahweh's congregation is ruled by Yahweh. So, as time went on, a man by the name of Andrew Duggar was named now the editor of the Bible Advocate. And Brother Duggar, he ran the work very good for many years, and things started really growing in America. In 1931, there was a meeting of all the elders of the Church of God Seventh Day. And it was unanimously voted upon that Brother Duggar would go to Jerusalem. And he would set up and establish and start an end time work for the return of Yeshua. Brother Duggar went for 6 months. And upon his return, he found out the church was crumbling from within. There was a split that happened at that time in 1931. Part of the church went with Brother Duggar to Salem, West Virginia. And part of the church stayed in the West in Oregon. Things continued that way for a while. And in 1949, the two branches came back together. Brother Duggar really didn't agree with it, though. Because part of the branch was very liberal. They believed in smoking chewing tobacco. Even eating unclean meat, some of them. So Brother Duggar split from the Church of God Seventh Day. And he was going to India and some other places, doing a good work for Yahweh. And then his wife got very sick. They were on a mission trip and she wound up with typhoid fever. She was losing a lot of blood. And the doctors gave no hope for survival. Brother Duggar went in on one Friday afternoon. And they asked for his phone number because they thought his wife would die that night. But he prayed to Yahweh. And he said, "Father, if you heal my wife, I will keep my promise and I will go to Jerusalem and start the end time work there." When he came the next day, he was amazed amazement. They said, "Come quickly." His wife was completely healed. And the first thing she said to him was, "Remember your promise." 6 months later, 1952, Brother Duggar and his family went to Jerusalem to lay the foundation for Yahweh's end time. He continued there faithfully. In 1971, he sent a man by the name of Andy Schumacher to Kenya, because there were several in Kenya that had asked for a visit. Brother Duggar was too old at that time. He was already 85. So Schumacher went on his behalf. And he ordained 16 elders and many, many brethren. Baptized many brethren. Unfortunately, at that time, he baptized in the wrong name. Let me say, I do believe those people received the Holy Spirit. Because the sacred name had not been revealed by Yahweh yet. They didn't know the sacred name. And Brother Duggar was a true elder of Yahweh. But remember, in the end time, it's not about Brother Duggar. It's not about Brother Don. It's about Yahweh. And Yahweh clearly says in His Word, Jeremiah 16, verse 21, "But in that day they will all know my name is Yahweh." Brother Duggar died in
1975.
Gordon Fouth took over from there. Things continued for about 10-12 years. 1987, the first intifada, the uprising, started with the Arabs and the Israelis. And what we know is Church of God Seventh Day Jerusalem ceased to exist. There was fighting, they couldn't continue. Gordon Fouth got very sick after that. And actually was refined to a wheelchair. In 1997, Yahweh brought me to Israel. I didn't know at that time it was just to continue with his end time work. It was some miraculous circumstances that he brought me there. But in the year 2000, he connected us with the Kenyan Brethren. And the Kenyan Brethren told us, we've heard nothing from Jerusalem in 12, 13 years. Now I come from Church of God background. I was baptized in the early 1980s by Church of God elder. I was ordained in
1994
by a Church of God elder who also was a Sacred Name believer. Sacred Name was just starting to move along at that time. So the Kenyan Brethren had already come to the knowledge of the Sacred Name before I met them. And they asked me, they said that Naomi is still in Jerusalem. Can you find her?
I
was shocked. I didn't think anybody was still there anymore. Because it's also my history. The Church of God was my mother.
At the time,
and started my road on this walk at 17 years old. So I went back to Jerusalem. I found Naomi. And we became very close friends. I used to go there sometimes for hours and just sit there and listen to the stories. From her grandfather in the
1800s.
In 2003, Naomi decided she wanted to reopen the Duggar building. But she said she did not want to do it without leadership. And she asked me if I would be the leader there. And I gladly accepted. I had the privilege for almost 2 years preaching right behind Brother Duggar's pulpit. And in the year Yom Kippur, 2003, we kept our first service there. And our beloved brother Joseph Mathathia from Kenya was with us. And I was the leader of that church for almost 2 years. Then Naomi's son came one day from America.
Babylon.
And he took out the Church of God Seventh Day sign. And he told me, we are Church of God, we are not Congregation of Yahweh. And I said, that's fine, you are Church of God, we are Congregation of Yahweh. See, I'll say something now. I've said it before. And I'll say it again. Yahweh didn't send me to continue in Duggar's work. Duggar's work was Duggar's work. It was a good work. Yahweh willing, he'll be there at the first resurrection. Yahweh sent me to restore his name to Jerusalem. And that's what I faithfully have been doing there for 15 years. When I told Naomi Sundis, then they didn't want me meeting in that building anymore. I wondered for a long time why Yahweh took me there to begin with. There was no Church of God anymore. It was gone for 12, 13 years. But Yahweh did it for judicial order. Because Yahweh works in judicial order. I usurped nobody's work. But I went on the commission of Yahweh Himself. Since I've been there now, the last 12, 13 years, Yahweh has opened some amazing doors. Doors that go all the way up to the Prime Minister's office. I am the only person in the history of the Congregation of Yahweh that on more than eight occasions, I've been invited to the Knesset, the very law place of Israel, to speak. As Yahweh's ambassador. Brother Colleen can tell you. He was there at the Knesset. He was in a VIP seat. We were sitting in the very seats that Winston Churchill's granddaughter sat in. Now you know in Israel, they don't use the name Yahweh. They believe that Yahweh's name is Yahweh. But from the rabbis, they think it's too sacred to pronounce. Now we know that's not true. Because the Bible tells us to praise the name of Yahweh. To bless the name of Yahweh. To sing to the name of Yahweh. How can we do that if we're not using the name Yahweh? So when the government was starting to work with me, and they believe in what we're doing, this work, they said there's only one thing. The Jewish people will not accept this if you're using the name Yahweh. They said, can you change the name of the congregation? And my answer was, the day I change the name of the congregation is the day that Yahweh takes me out of Jerusalem. I don't have the authority to change the name of the creator of the universe. I don't have the authority to change the name of his congregation. And like I said, his congregation is not a corporation. It's a spiritual organism. It's from the Holy Spirit putting his spirit in each of us. And having elder, lay hands on elder to elder. And having Yeshua's congregation continue for 2,000 years. I told the man, if it was good enough for Yahweh for 2,000 years, it's good enough for me. And I'm still there today. The work is going on in power. I was just named a few months ago as international director for bringing volunteers from all over the world. They asked me from the Israeli food bank for storing war for storing food for the war, just like Joseph in the Bible. And like I said, I've had invitations from the Prime Minister's office to the Knesset. I share about Yahweh's work all around the world. And I share about your love for Yahweh. I tell about the brethren in Ethiopia and Sudan. And the brethren all over the world. We have congregations in Uganda that walk 2 to 3 hours every morning to pray for Israel. They never heard of this in the Israeli government. But they're very happy about it. They have a moratorium. They're not allowing any Africans in Israel right now. Because there's been a problem. Because of war and things going on, as you know, many Africans have been sneaking into Israel as refugees. And now in a little country, it's becoming many, many people. Unfortunately, some are even committing crimes. So it's been very hard to get Africans in there. But as you know, three of your elders, Colane being one of them, he went to apply at the embassy in Addis Ababa. And they weren't going to let him go. And the Prime Minister's office called the embassy there. And they said, "Do you know these men?" And they said, "No, but we know Don. And if Don says they're good people, we trust him. Please give them visa to come in." And for the first time this feast, you had three of your elders in Jerusalem with the name of Yahweh. I am working day and night for Yahweh's end time work from Israel. There's only two things that will stop me. Either Yahweh will take my life and I'll rest in the ground until the resurrection, or else every single one of you will be in Israel. But until the day I see every one of you in the Holy Land, and see every one of you in the city of the great King, Jerusalem, I will fight for Yahweh till my very breath. And I will work to open that door to bring you home within Yahweh's timing. But I can tell you, in being there for 15 years, I would have never thought 15 years ago that we would ever be where we are today. The doors that Yahweh is opening, no man can shut. And Yahweh is blessing his congregation and restoring all things in these end times. So it is my honor and my blessing to be here with you this weekend. I look forward to speaking to many of you personally, getting to know you better. And I will read Psalm 122 as we end. Psalm 122. I was glad when they said to me, "Let us go to the house of Yahweh. Our feet shall stand within your gates, O Jerusalem." Jerusalem is built like a city that is joined to itself together. There the tribes go up, the tribes of Yah, to the testimony of Israel, to give thanks to the name of Yahweh. For the thrones of judgments were established there. The thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Those who love you shall prosper. Peace be within your walls, prosperity in your towers. Because of my brothers and my companions, I will now say peace in you. Because of the house of Yahweh or Elohim, I will seek your good. Brethren, next year in Jerusalem.